6.
Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You listen to the sound of universal compassion. Today's 9th of July. We will continue listening to Tenzin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davis. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome to this week's program. For those new to the program, we're going through the text, The Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And last week, we completed the chapter on alertness. Today, we come to a chapter that His Holiness reckons is one of the two most important for us to study. It's the chapter on developing patience, which is so important because patience is the antidote to anger. And we know how much damage anger and aggression does in our world. If we can finally gain control of our anger, how much peace we will be able to generate, not only in our own minds, but also in our whole environment. I've been told of many monks in Thailand, Cambodia and Sri Lanka who are able to spend their lives among the tigers, bears and other wild animals in the jungle without being attacked. One of the main reasons is the monk's strong focus on loving kindness and patience towards all those things like wild animals, disease and so on, that usually bring fear and aggression to our minds. As the Buddha said, holding on to anger is like holding on to a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone else. You are the one who gets burned. So it's extremely important to do whatever we can to develop patience, the antidote to anger, and in this chapter, Shantideva puts forward a number of very ingenious ways we can transform our view so that patience becomes our driving force. However, before we start looking at the verses, let's take a moment to set our motivation as usual. Those of you who have been with us before will know that usually we start by thinking about motivation. You may question the reason for that, and I'll explain with a pair of contrasting examples. A farmer keeps a flock of sheep on his farm. He sees that they are fed well and given all the right medicines and potions to keep them healthy. However, his motivation is so that he can slaughter them, sell their meat and wool, and keep up his wealthy lifestyle. Now that's one example. In the other one, a Buddhist monk who's very good at debating takes on others in a debate and defeats them. The monk is very pleased with himself and boasts about his prowess. His teacher, however, scolds him very severely and makes him clean the monk's dirty toilets. In the first example, it appears that the farmer is very kind to his sheep. He looks after them very well. But if we look at his motivation, we see that, in fact, he's not being kind at all. He's only fattening them up so that he can kill them for profit. He has no real concern for the sheep at all. So the action of looking after the sheep is not positive. In Buddhism, we say it's non-virtuous, and because of negative karma, will lead to suffering for the farmer in coming lives. In the second example, the teacher would appear to be very harsh to his student. He scolds him soundly and makes him do the most menial type of work. But if we look at his motivation, we see that his actions are only out of concern for his student. If he doesn't curb the student's pride, it will grow bigger and bigger and become a huge obstacle to the student getting realizations on the Buddhist path. So the student will take much longer to gain enlightenment and will go through a lot of suffering because of his pride and arrogance. So actually, the teacher's punishment is a positive, virtuous action, as it really helps the student gain what he wants, enlightenment. Now, from these examples, we can see that what makes an action beneficial or not is not the effect or end result. That may be good or bad according to circumstances, and the calm of the people involved. But it is the motivation that makes the action positive or negative. For instance, maybe the student does not learn from the master's punishment and still lets himself get very puffed up. That doesn't change the fact that the master's action was virtuous through his kind motivation. What then is our motivation for participating in these programs? If I have the motivation to get some kind of praise or credit, if I think I will become famous and people will come to me for advice and give me lots of gifts, my speaking on the radio will all be negative and it will just lead to suffering for me in the future. Similarly, if you listen thinking that you may learn some way to defraud other people, like learning how to appear as a good person so you can get some money or praise, then even the action of listening to the Dharma is not virtuous and will have poor and negative results for you in the future. But if our motivation, both yours and mine, is to gain enlightenment, because we can then be in the best situation to help others, our participation will be perfect. It will only lead us to become Buddhas in the future. So please, let's take a few seconds to look at our motivation, and if we find anything faulty in it, to realign it so that it becomes bodhicitta, the wish to gain enlightenment so we can be of the best possible help to others. The texts say that no motivation is greater than this. Actually, the text we are going to be following in these programs, Shantideva's Bodhisattva's Way of Life, has a verse which says, "Having contemplated intensely for many eons, the Buddhas have seen it to be beneficial, because it enables limitless masses of beings to instantly attain the supreme state of bliss." The verse is talking about the bodhicitta motivation, and says that when the Buddhas contemplated for a very long time, as the verse says, for many eons, on what was the most beneficial to help beings become fully enlightened and free from all suffering, they found it was this motivation. So if we can develop this motivation for everything we do, imagine the amount of positive karma we will create. Enormous. Okay, let's then at least set this motivation for participating in this program. Thank you. We've all just created the cause to become enlightened in the future. But now, coming back to the programs, before we go on with Shantideva, I must admit I have a very long way to go to master the techniques he recommends. The coming programs are not a case of a teacher having mastered his subject matter, but rather one of someone still very much in the process of transforming his inner demons, who is nevertheless passing on some of the knowledge he's been taught and found useful. And talking about demons in Buddhism, we don't really believe in outer demons with horns, forked tail, and flaming fork, although such things may appear to us. The real demons are primarily the disturbing emotions, like anger, attachment, pride, arrogance, and fear, and so on, we've allowed to take over and control our lives. For instance, how would you react if someone who dislikes you drove a car straight at you and nearly ran over you? Would you get angry enough to do something to get back at them? When Devadatta drove a mad rogue elephant at the Buddha to kill him, the Buddha sat down and meditated on such strong love that the elephant was calmed and knelt down before him. And the Buddha made no attempt to take revenge on Devadatta. In fact, it is said that later, when Devadatta was in a hell realm, the Buddha appeared there to help him get out. The Buddha was only able to act in these ways because he had completely transformed previous anger and aggression into patience, love, and compassion. So this next part of our series of programs is about how to tame one of our inner demons, the one which is actually much more harmful than any outer demon could be. An outer demon, like a very aggressive, dominant, and violent enemy, can only cause us limited amount of harm. For instance, the torture some Tibetans go through in communist Chinese jails, although terrible, can only last as long as the prisoner or the torturers are alive. Once a prisoner has died, the torturer has no more power over him or her. But if we have anger on our mind streams and we don't try to control it, it will blight our minds and resurface again and again, life after life, only to cause us endless suffering. The more we let it take us over, the worse it will get until we are its slave and tortured by it for many, many lifetimes. In fact, as you will hear later in these programs, some texts say anger is the main course to land up in hell. Now here I better clarify what we mean by anger. Primarily, we're talking about an emotion that through aversion wishes to be free of something or someone and also wishes harm on them. So it has these two characteristics of aversion and harm. His Holiness the Dalai Lama talks about an anger motivated by compassion or love. Now we're not talking about that kind of anger. For instance, a mother may tell her child not to play around a creek with steep banks and deep water near their home. However, the child persistently creeps out to the creek wherever he can. Eventually, the mother may have to scold or punish the child very strongly. In such a situation, the mother is obviously acting out of concern for the child's welfare. If she doesn't take stern action, the child may lose his life. This is not the manifestation of anger we're talking about here. The mother's action comes out of love and compassion for the child. We are talking about the anger that a driver lets loose in a road rage situation, for instance, leading to actions totally disproportionate to whatever fault appeared in the beginning. But we are also not only talking about people beating others with a hammer. The term anger also covers irritation, even mild dislike. Anything that has those characteristics, aversion and harm, even though it may be a small irritation, that arises when, for instance, someone puts a spatula in the wrong place in the kitchen and you can't find it immediately. You may tell me you don't want to harm the person who did it, but if the thought arises, so-and-so is so stupid, why didn't he put the spatula in the right place? Can you see how the irritation puts an aggressive label on the other person? They're stupid. And doesn't that show an element of running them down, of harm? The introduction to the Padmakara Translation Group's translation of A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life puts it this way. Anger is regarded as the most destructive and perilous of all mental factors. Anger, defined as the flooding of the mind with violent and aggressive feelings, leading naturally to hostility and conflict, is outlawed in Buddhism as in no other religious tradition. Aside from a purely external and, as it were, artificial indignation put on for purely educational purposes, which has compassion as its motive and is acted out by the one whose mind is under control, anger has absolutely no place in the scheme of spiritual development. I know what we say about anger, that it is a destructive emotion and should be transformed, contradicts what some Western psychology says about emotions, that they just are a natural part of us and there are no destructive emotions as such. It has been said to me that anger is okay. It's a natural reaction to a perceived threat and must be given its due. While I agree that it must be given notice and taken care of, as a Buddhist monk and one not at all free from anger, I do not accept that it's just a natural part of our makeup we should let ride. We only have to look at the results of anger to see it as manifestly and potentially extremely destructive and causes indescribable harm. Our own experiences will confirm that. What actually is the effect of anger? Does it make us happy? Does it bring happiness to those we get angry with? Is it capable of bringing long-term happiness? It is quite obvious that anger creates an unpleasant disturbance in our minds. Look carefully, and you will also see that it also clouds our judgment and urges us to act and speak in ways we wouldn't dream of in saner moments. How many times have you said something in anger that you really regretted later? Often a perfectly friendly relationship is marred or destroyed by a few words spoken in anger, even though they might have been sincerely regretted afterwards. You see, anger has this powerful ability to distort our thinking so that we are very easily persuaded we have every right to be angry and to say and do the things we do. At the moment of anger, the mind constructs a scaffold of justifications why we are right and should take violent action, and that doesn't necessarily mean physically violent. I've found this again and again with myself, but when I've calmed down and thought about the situation, it became very clear that the justifications had no rational backing whatsoever. If my mind was clear and calm, I would have seen much better reasons for acting in a different way and caused much less harm and disturbance. Isn't that the way anger operates? And can you see how dangerous it is? Also, anger spoils our immediate future. Once you've had an angry argument with someone else, it often blights the rest of your day. For some time afterwards, you can't settle down, and a niggling feeling of irritation or disquiet stays with you. Sometimes that irritation bursts out into anger in other situations, so the whole thing feeds off itself. I think we must all have had days in which nothing seemed to go right. Everything frustrated us. Most of the problem, though, is not actually with what is happening outside of us. It is with what is going on in our minds. If we could clear the mind of that feeling of constant irritation, the day would probably go much better. But perhaps the biggest problem with anger is that it creates havoc with our long-term future. Buddhism is all about training the mind. Because we believe nothing has its own inherent permanent characteristics, things can be changed, and this is also true of the mind. And I'm using mind here in the Tibetan sense, the whole internal event, cognition, reasoning, emotions, sensations, everything, not just the faculty of consciousness and thought. We can change anything about ourselves we want to with effort and determination. Sometimes we need a lot of effort and determination. Actually, that's the whole reason why we can become enlightened, because we are not essentially fixed in any way. But while we can change for the better, we can also change for the worse. And that's what happens when we let anger dictate to us again and again. What I'm saying is that the more we allow anger to have been an acceptable reaction, the more we will react angrily in the future, and the more unhappiness we will experience and give to others. You probably know people who are always grumpy. They always seem to find something to irritate them. This is especially true of some old people. And how did they come to be like that? Can you say they were made that way? No. They became like that by in some way thinking anger is okay and using it again and again. Eventually, it becomes so ingrained it just automatically arises in any situation. Eventually, it colors everything and may affect their health and certainly makes life a trial for everyone around them. But that's still not the worst result of anger from a Buddhist point of view. The worst comes when we die and have to go on to another life. Then where do you imagine we will land up with all that stored anger and the mental conditioning we've created? If we have really habituated ourselves to react angrily, we cannot help but be born in a very hostile kind of situation. As I said before, the main cause for hell is said in the text to be anger, which makes sense, don't you think? Overt anger creates a hot, very uncomfortable situation, both claustrophobic and violent. So if that's the kind of situation we create, that is the kind of experience we will have to live with. And because karma multiplies and conditioning becomes stronger and stronger the more we repeat it, we could land up in a violently aggressive situation for a very long time. So you see, this is why I said earlier that an earthly enemy is no match when it comes to the demon within our own mind. The earthly enemy has very little power to harm in comparison. This is why the Buddha said that we shouldn't think we will be punished because of our anger, we will be punished by our anger. So how do we rob anger of its power to harm? The answer to that is the whole thrust of this chapter. Patience, the antidote to anger, is not just a grin and bear attitude. It means seeing how a situation can be approached so that one's mind is left undisturbed and calm. We learn in this chapter how to change our attitudes by seeing every situation as a step on the path to enlightenment and reacting to it wisely instead of destructively. So it means effort on our part and determination. Just listening to these programs will not stop the anger from arising, sometimes too strongly to resist. But if we put the techniques and advices of this chapter into practice, we can slowly change our minds so that anger has less and less of a chance to arise and so gets weaker and weaker. We have to do the opposite of what a friend of mine did. He told me that when he was young, he was well known for his patience and acceptance. However, he came to the conclusion that patience didn't help him, so he abandoned it and instead gave free rein to his impatience. He's a big man, and so when he gets angry, he's quite intimidating and threatening and makes himself very unpleasant to be around. Now, if we do the opposite and learn how to curb our anger, not only will we live much happier lives, but all those around us will be much happier as well. Learning how to free ourselves from anger does not mean suppressing it. That really will lead to a heart attack or something worse. Freeing ourselves from anger means looking closely at the reasons for it and its effect, and reconditioning our minds to work in a more sane, compassionate way. Compassionate with ourselves and compassionate with others. For actually, when we give away to anger, we do great damage to both ourselves and others. We affect how our body remains healthy and our mind peaceful. We affect the people around us and how they react with the environment and others, and so the effects of our anger spread out far beyond the immediate burst of emotion. We may not see the overall effects of our anger, but they are there and will result in much difficulty in the future. When we do not allow the demon anger to affect us, we preserve our good health and complexion, and we make a big difference to the peace of both those around us and our future. You know, when people have heart attacks, doctors often prescribe good diet, exercise, and some medication. But a heart attack is just a manifestation of some mental ailment like anger, and so we don't only need physical remedies, but mental ones as well. Learning how to develop greater and greater patience is one of the best remedies. Others are love and compassion. So now, let's start learning how Shantideva develops patience. The first verse in this chapter reads, "Good works gathered in 1,000 ages, such as deeds of generosity or offerings to the blissful ones, a single flash of anger shatters them." Now think back to a time when you became very angry. How easy was it to control, and especially, how quickly did the anger arise? Did it give you any time to realize that it was coming? Usually, we are in the very midst of anger before we actually know it. It strikes out of the blue, and suddenly we're caught in the middle of this very uncomfortable, overriding emotion. Isn't that how it is? And what about practicing patience? The mind stays calm and unruffled even when things seem to be made to irritate us. Well, that is very difficult. We can't just say, "Oh, I'm not going to get angry anymore," and expect a switch to go off every time we get into a stressful situation. Well, maybe you can, which either shows you're a very accomplished meditator or you're good at avoidance techniques. But most of us can't do that, and have to rely on some very serious effort and determination to help us overcome anger and perfect patience. But as you know, usually we are not motivated to put effort into anything unless we have some very good reasons for doing so. For instance, somebody who was serious about becoming a world-class athlete would have to look at training many hours a day. But someone who just enjoys a bit of sport on the weekend with friends will be very casual about training. If we really want to free ourselves from anger and develop patience, we have to know well the reasons for doing so, many of which we've just covered. As we said, not only does anger make us feel uncomfortable, but it is very disturbing to others. It is detrimental to our health and encourages a predisposition to react with anger again in the future. In terms of karma, in our future lives, imprints of anger will throw us into very difficult, aggressive situations in which we will suffer a lot. In fact, anger motivated by aversion brings us all nothing but misery. In this first verse of Shantideva's chapter, he explains another disadvantage of anger, that it destroys the positive potential we've built up from virtuous actions like generosity and making offerings to the Buddhas and so on. Each time we do something positive, it builds our store of merit or positive potential, and weakens our negative tendencies. But similarly, every time we do something negative, like killing or stealing and so on, we build up our accumulation of negative tendencies and weaken the positive. When we lose our cool, as it were, we allow a strong negative energy to take over our mind, and that negative energy has the power to destroy positive potential we've previously accumulated. Which is all pretty awful if you think about it, but when Shantideva says that a single flash of anger destroys eons of positive potential, he's talking about the specific situation where you are angry with a great being, a Buddha or a Bodhisattva. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that the immediate fault of anger is the destruction of peace of mind and all pleasure. For instance, your enjoyment of the taste of food disappears and a sense of unease arises even towards those close to you. However, a unique characteristic of anger, he says, is that it also destroys the potential of virtue that applies to pleasurable results in the future. It is contextual, he says, depending on the object. For example, the more holy the object we are angry with, the greater the virtue destroyed, and so anger has the strong power to destroy virtue. Now, because of their abilities and their intention to only be of service to sentient beings, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are objects of great karmic power, and so if we go against them, we are creating very heavy consequences for ourselves. Not only will the karmic result involve a lot of suffering if it is not purified, but huge amounts of the positive potential which we have already built up and need to gain Buddhahood will be destroyed. We'll have to start collecting all over again. And we have to be careful because we don't know who is a Buddha or a Bodhisattva. The great beings generally don't go around proclaiming, "Hey, pay attention to me, I'm a great Bodhisattva." Usually, they keep their accomplishments very much to themselves and act very ordinarily. So even your boss could be a Bodhisattva and you would not know it. That is why the teachings advise us to be very careful about our anger and try not to let it out against any being. The positive potential that can be destroyed by anger is that which is collected through positive deeds. It is not the positive potential we build up by studying the nature of existence, emptiness, reciting mantras and so on which lead to wisdom. That cannot be touched by anger. But the positive potential we gain through helping others, being generous and paying homage to the Buddhas and so on, which is called the method part of the Buddhist path, as opposed to the wisdom aspect, can be destroyed by anger. However, there's one way you can prevent that from happening, and that is by dedicating your positive potential well. When we perform a positive action with a very good intention, it's a good idea to seal the action with a strong positive dedication. The best dedication is to gain enlightenment to be of greatest benefit to all others. That, of course, is the bodhicitta mind. With this dedication, whatever positive potential we have created cannot be destroyed by anger. And with that, we must go because time is up. We've only covered one verse in the chapter, but have laid a good foundation for understanding the destructive nature of anger and why we should practice patience. Before we sign off, please dedicate any positive potential we have accumulated during the program to gaining the mind of bodhicitta. This is particularly pertinent in today's context because with a continuous bodhicitta motivation, anger will have very little opportunity to overcome us. Thank you, and I hope you will join us again next week. Until then, goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.